Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday, the 10th of April. Today, I'm joined by Saya Deb, who is a Watson's Daily subscriber. Hey there, Saya, how are you doing today?
Hi, Peter. Yeah, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thank you, all good. So which story did you pick out from today's edition of Watson's Daily?
So the story I picked today is from the Daily Telegraph. UK energy company EnQuest is to start drilling in the North Sea at the biggest field discovered in 20 years.
Yep.
Is despite industry efforts to achieve net zero emissions goals. I think that Labour talk of blocking new production due to environmental worries has energy companies warning that the UK might cut off its own energy supplies before they even find a replacement. I think this is really interesting in light of a European court ruling that I read about yesterday. So on April 9th, a group of Swiss women won the first ever climate case victory in the European Court of Human Rights. They argued that Switzerland had failed to comply with its duties under the convention, which concerned climate change, and that basically countries need to better protect their people from the consequences of climate change. So this ruling's binding. It can trickle down to influence the law in Europe and in the UK, and you know, potentially set a precedent for future legal actions, which will shape environmental regulations not only on a national level but on an international level as well. So I think that that's going to be really impactful and serve as almost a benchmark for future lawsuits within European states. We've seen, you know, quite a few cases recently which are critiquing the European government's sustainability efforts, one being by a former French mayor. French government submerged in the North Sea, which is actually quite ironic, you know, considering that an energy company is due to start drilling in the North Sea. And there's, you know, the risk of his town being submerged. Nowadays, there's this real emphasis on sustainability and pressure not only on governments, but on companies too, to, you know, be more sustainable. And the government's race to meet net zero targets has led to increased pressure to accelerate transitions to sustainable practices. What do you think about this?
Well, I think that this is a very difficult thing, because on the surface, it actually seems quite simple. You know, oil and gas companies bad, environment good. Oil and gas companies drilling holes in the planet and taking stuff out has got to damage the planet. On the other hand, there are lots of people in the various countries, and these people use electricity in their daily lives. And it seems that over time, we use more electricity or more energy, rather, than we did in the past. So although some of that some of that power comes from you know, some of it comes from oil, and some of it comes from, you know, sustainable sources like wind power and sea power and stuff, the thing is that, you know, it seems that we can't rely particularly on renewables for everything, because they are volatile. You know, if you don't get rain, that's not very good for hydropower. If it's really cloudy and there's no sun, it's bad for solar power. I mean, I suppose maybe the sea is maybe a bit better, but, you know, but the thing is that, you know, those kind, if you have those kinds of things, it makes life very difficult. Whereas, you know, oil and gas is something that everyone knows and has used over decades. And so actually, you know, I think there is a point to be made in terms of, well, if we've got this, what appears to be this massive oil field on our doorstep, it does seem a bit hasty to decide not to use it if we haven't got anything to replace what it would provide. So, you know, and especially when you consider that we are going to be using more energy, you know, in things, you know, in the developments of AI and charging EVs and stuff like that. So, but I don't know, what do you think of Labour then saying that they say that they would block new production on environmental grounds. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that there's a worry that the world is at risk of energy shortages. So I think that blocking new production in the UK does risk severing its own energy supplies before even securing a suitable replacement. You know, if we haven't found a suitable replacement, then we have to rely on imported energy to make up for this shortfall. So that's increasing dependency on foreign sources. And, you know, we talked about this yesterday. This is exposing the country to geopolitical risks, which are already an issue. So I think that a really careful energy planning and transition strategy needs to be put in place so that we can secure energy security and stability, in my opinion. But I think that this is just the beginning of climate litigation. I think that it's only going to become more onerous, which is quite an exciting time for the law. You know, litigation being used as a tool for holding corporations and governments accountable for their actions. But simultaneously, you know, energy shortages can have serious consequences for households, businesses, the economy. And I don't know if relying on imported energy would be the best idea.
Okay, fair enough. Was there anything else you wanted to add there?
No, not in particular.
No, fair enough. I mean, I suppose I would also say that I'd probably just add that I would have thought this could have, you know, stopping drilling could have really massive consequences for, say, Scotland, you know, especially places like Aberdeen, which are highly geared towards the oil industry. I mean, I presume that a lot of them would be very supportive of this drilling because it creates jobs, you know, not just drilling the oil out, but all the related stuff, you know, like, I don't know, sandwich shops and whatnot, you know, in these places that support, you know, that support the industry generally.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that there's, you know, there's that, there's definitely that to consider. And I think that although what Labour says sounds logical, even, you know, it sounds logical. Look, you know, they're saying we will block, you know, we'll block the drilling on environmental grounds. But, you know, at the same time, you do have to provide, I think you have to provide an alternative. And at the moment, there is no, I mean, there are some alternatives. But at the moment, I don't think that they're not quite enough to replace the, you know, what oil, you know, what oil actually does. So so we'll see what happens there. Okay, so I guess I'll move on to my subject today, which is not light. I mean, I always want to keep it light, but, you know, I just thought I would mention this because this is a story from the Financial Times, and it's about China and Russia working together and basically trying to shore up their respective supply chains. Now, it's quite interesting that they were very cordial while, you know, the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was flying away, having had, you know, having had meetings in Beijing. And it's almost like they, you know, they were sticking two fingers up at her and just saying, well, you know, you know where you can stick your, you know, your threats. Look at us, we're getting together and we don't need you. And, you know, whatever. I mean, that's I think that's kind of the way I would see it. But, you know, the thing is with this is that really China and Russia have been pushed together by the sanctions. And so, for instance, so China now buys around 40% of Russia's crude oil. So all that, the sanctions of the West not buying the crude oil, well, China buys it. Now, actually, China buys it and India buys it. But anyway, so China now buys 40% of Russia's crude oil, most of it's coal, and it is one of the top three buyers of Russian oil products and various other, you know, basically oil-related stuff. Yeah. So, you know, they've been driven together. I do get a feeling that Russia is very much the junior partner in this relationship. And I do feel that China, whenever it feels a bit annoyed, it tends to emphasize its closeness to Russia. And, you know, if it really wants to annoy everyone, it you know, talks about North Korea and supports North Korea as well, because it just, I don't know, they just seem to use it. Because my feeling is that they're using this relationship as a bit of a threat to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually I do get the impression that China is trying to get closer to countries in the Middle East like Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite interesting how, you know, this is another example of how these geopolitical relationships are changing.
Yeah.
And I think that this goes to show that really sanctions, economic sanctions, seem to work okay in the short to medium term.
Yeah.
But in the longer term, they do damage, because, for instance, like China, there have been so many sanctions against China, particularly since Trump came to power in 2016. And they're just putting these sanctions into place. And it basically means that China and Russia have had to change their supply chains and perhaps put more money into developing technology that they don't have, so that in the future these sanctions won't work so well.
Yeah.
And that is not good for the rest of the world, because I think I forgot whether I was mentioning this yesterday, but it almost feels like, you know, a lot for many, many years of over many, many years of peace, everyone's been lulled into a sense of false sense of security. And, you know, they've gravitated towards places that produce at the cheapest price.
Yeah.
Whereas now you have to think more about what are the geopolitical situations, not only now, but what happens in the future. I mean, this is why I think that if Putin stays in power, mm-hmm. You know, let's say they decide to have a ceasefire, they come to some sort of, I don't know, compromise with regard to Ukraine. As long as Putin is in power, no one is going to believe that he's going to not do this again.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to, companies will have to plan for that. And yeah, so, I mean, this is a difficult thing. And again, it's just symptomatic of the longer term implications of sanctions.
Yeah.
But what do you think?
I agree in terms of sanctions. I mean, that even as Western countries have imposed sanctions against Russia, Moscow has still sustained its economy and defense industry. Mm. And that's thanks to expanded trade with China, and also direct military supplies from North Korea. So that has just brought them even closer together. So, and it's strengthened their geopolitical influence, particularly in areas where they have economic interests or strategic partnerships. And that's going to ultimately challenge the dominance of Western countries in their ability to shape global trade policies. You know, you mentioned alternative trade routes and supply chain networks. We're going to see, I think, a reduced dependence on China and on Russia, on trade routes that have been dominated by Western countries. control over key trade routes. You know, it's historically been a source of geopolitical influence for Western countries.
Yeah.
Routes is going to weaken Western countries' ability, you know, to shape global trade patterns. And I just wonder where this is going to end. The way it's going, I think it seems that countries are going to be very independent, which will in turn distort markets. So, you know, I don't know if it's looking very positive right now.
No. I mean, that's the thing, you know, basically countries become ever more independent, which means that potentially when things go, you know, when things happen, there are less economic sanctions and less economic levers that can be pulled, which means that you're more likely to actually go to war because there's nothing else. There's no bargaining chip anymore because everyone's got their own, you know, energy. They've got their own tech. They've got their own, you know, this, that, and the other. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that this is something that I think everyone needs to keep in mind. You know, whether you're planning businesses, thinking about what's going to happen in the future on a strategic basis. I think it's not just the West that has to think about what's going on in, say, China and Russia, but also China and Russia. I think, I mean, like with China, for instance, the expansion of EVs into the West. Is that gonna, you know, is that gonna be taken away from them? I mean, all these things, I mean, I mentioned it today and recently, I've mentioned it recently about how, you know, the European Commission, it's almost like every day another investigation is announced on, you know, where they're saying that basically the common denominator of all these investigations is that they feel that, or they are investigating allegations that whatever industry it may be, depending on the day, is getting unfair amount of help from the Chinese state. And it's like I say, it's almost, it feels like it's almost on a daily basis now. I think that's these things are changing, the sands are shifting, and you know, if those kinds of investigations get to the conclusion that they perhaps should, you know, then there's going to be sanctions all over the place. And I don't know what those sanctions, you know, because there's some sanctions, like you think maybe, oh, you know, maybe China says, right, we are not going to give you or allow you access to X ingredient that is used in electric vehicle batteries. And then what happens then? You know, then EVs grind to a halt. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of levers they could pull. They've not pulled them all yet. And I think that, you know, if you get these investigations in particular side on with Europeans, then it's going to get pretty messy. Anyway, so on that light note, end here. I mean, I know it's a bit of a heavy topic, but
yeah,
I don't know, it is something worth thinking about and considering for businesses, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, well, thank you very much indeed for your time. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. And thank you very much for listeners for listening. Hope you have a great day, whatever you're doing. Forget about all this heavy stuff. You know, do something fun. And many thanks, and we'll be back again tomorrow. Many thanks. Bye.